So welcome to Confessions of a Serial Seller. My guest today is quite the entrepreneur. He was the creator of the Sales Hacker that got acquired by Outreach in 2018. And if you've not come across that, it's the number one sales engagement platform. He was voted by LinkedIn the top voice for sales in 2018. And he's author of Hacking Sales and Career Hacking for Millennials. He's also in his part-time is a co-founder of pushupcharity.org. Max Alschuler, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Mate, I've followed you for many years. I'm a big fan of your content that you put out, and you really, I love your whole perspective on selling. Tell my audience just a bit about you, of how you first got into sales and how it all, Sales Hacker, and how everything came about.
Yeah, definitely. So a son of a financial advisor who, was always his own boss. So, you know, part entrepreneur, part salesperson, part financial therapist is almost what they are.
Yeah.
A lot about relationships and relationship building from him, and a lot about selling from him, a lot about, you know, being an entrepreneur from him because he ran his own shop. And his favorite story is when I was in grade school, really early on, in our side, probably, 9 or 10 years old. So what is that, like third grade? He said the principal called him and said, "Your son is selling his Halloween candy on the school bus."
Yeah, I love that.
Well, it's, we love the entrepreneurial spirit. It's very frowned upon here.
Yeah.
His kids would go to school with money to buy like pencils and erasers and notebooks from the school store. And they'd end up spending it on, mini Skittles packets that I was selling that I had cooped from Halloween.
Brilliant.
My first foray into sales, and I've always been entrepreneurial and sales focused since then. The Sales Hacker came about when I was at a company called Udemy, which is an online education marketplace.
I know it.
Yeah. I think I was the 8th employee there, second business hire, and first person focused on the supply side of the business, which is the sales side. We have to get instructors online, we have to sell them on coming on, putting their courseware online so we can get students to take their courses. Two-sided marketplace. And when I got that job, I looked at it in a very entrepreneurial way. Traditional sales tactics and a sales process wouldn't have worked. We needed to do more with less. We needed to hack the process. So we outsourced our SDRs to the Philippines and then just went on Upwork and got, $5 an hour Filipino virtual assistants to act as SDRs. We just taught, they were meant for admin purposes, and we just taught them how to be an SDR. Mm. We leveraged our sales engagement platforms, which is TaoDap, which no longer exists. We were scraping websites using Python and Phantom.js to essentially take, all the best-selling authors for a certain category and then go reach out to them and ask them to create courses. And so we called this kind of like, hacking sales. We were growing really fast, and other VCs and founders were asking us how we were doing that. And my founders, the people who ran my company, would point everybody in my direction. So I started to get into some really interesting conversations with companies about how they were doing it, how they were growing really fast at the startup stage. And so that led me to, leaving Udemy, starting the Sales Hacker Conference after having these, small little meetups and powwows with folks. And Sales Hacker Conference did really well. It was a profitable event. It took me 6 weeks to pull off. Wow. And there's a real business here.
Yeah.
So San Francisco conference led to a New York conference, which eventually led to the publication and which you see online right now, which led to meetups that we ran in 32 cities globally, which led to, a joint conference that we did with Salesforce. We were the only ones to be able to negotiate that agreement with them. And then the eventual acquisition by Outreach 5 years later. When we got acquired by Outreach, we were 80,000 subscribers. Now we're about 170,000 subscribers.
Wow.
Just rolled out the new kind of next evolution of Sales Hacker, which is the community. So now we're allowed generated content in there. People can come and ask questions, and anybody can go in and answer. And our vision for it is like to be the living and breathing sales encyclopedia, because when I started this, there were like no college courses.
Yeah.
There was no way to learn sales other than like getting in and doing it. And that felt unfair. Every other, major profession had a courseware. So we built it. And now you know, colleges could use that. Colleges that are coming out with sales programs, like the minute anything touches the textbook, it's outdated. In 2020, right? Technology's moving fast. Before, everything's moving fast. So we wanted something that was living and breathing, and we wanted something that was user generated and people can you know, help build upon over time. So we've got people that come in there and ask us about, you know, modern sales compensation, and that's great because we'll always have this piece that, like, this year, this is what people are seeing in compensation.
Yeah.
Next, completely evolved from that.
Yeah.
And in this geo, it could be one thing, but on that geo, it's another. Yeah. What are SDRs getting paid in Denver, Colorado is a different question than what are SDRs getting paid in London.
Yeah. So,
you know, it's there's a lot of education that needs to be done, and we want to be the ones to help deliver that and power.
It's amazing. If my listeners haven't heard of your Sales Hacker, how would you said it's a sales encyclopedia, but how does it work? What do they get from, what are the key benefits?
Yeah, so it's an online publication, a media company, just like anything, just like, you know, a news site that you would go to, except everything is focused on sales and sales best practices from practitioners who are in doing what you do. So if you're a director of sales, you're going to hear from other directors of sales or VPs of sales that are in a similar situation to you. Hopefully, you know, you can find value out of hearing from both sides. So let's say you're a Series B VP of sales. Well, maybe there's a Series D VP of sales that just wrote an article on something that you were thinking about.
Yeah.
And they're a year and a half or 2 years ahead of you. Great. Like, they just shared what they went through. That's exactly what you want. And then for the people who are at the big companies, the large enterprises, sometimes that's not good. Sometimes that means they move very slow. They want to know what all the nimble startups are doing so they can see how they can, you know, work that into their process at the big company. You know, well, a lot of times they're steering tankers while these startups are steering speedboats.
Yeah.
They want to be fast and move nimble. But it's good for them to be able to learn from the things, you know, earlier stage companies are doing that are testing and optimizing and iterating on. So they can take that and say, like, oh, okay, this is working. This is something that we need.
Amazing.
So, yeah. And so there's premium content, which is curated content that we put together from, like, our stable of 500 practitioners that we know are, you know, experts. And now there's user generated content. So anybody can go on, ask and answer a question.
Which is so clever. So as you say, it's constantly evolving, right?
Exactly.
Very clever. So you mentioned earlier on your success where, you know, you found these hacks, and obviously that's where the whole Sales Hacker was born. I love that. I love your story. What's your advice then for people now in selling technology, you know, whether you're an inside salesperson, whether you're an SDR, how can they, if they work for an organization, how can they embrace this technology and hack sales? Because you mentioned about having a VA, you mentioned about, you know, Python to look at, to clean websites. So what's your best advice?
Yeah, so there's some stuff I've been grokking a lot lately on how to set this up, because this is a question I get asked a lot. So, you know, a lot of people want, let's restart. So in the last 5 years, there's been billions poured into sales technology.
Yeah.
That is brand new. Salespeople had CRM and that was about it. You had your phone, your email, your CRM, and there was, like, nothing else. Maybe a couple data vendors. Now there's sales engagement, sales enablement, conversational intelligence, chat. I mean, the toolkit is ridiculous compared to 5 years ago. And if you're not taking advantage of the toolkit, then it would be like, you know, being a door-to-door salesman when the phone came out. It's like, and not into the phone. Yeah. Okay, so, like, are you going to be, if I have the phone and you don't, are you really going to beat me in sales? I have the entire world I can sell to, and you have a, you know, 10 block radius.
Yeah.
Like, there's no possible way, right? So not taking advantage of the modern stuff is seems kind of silly. Now, getting to the thing that I've been grokking lately, the setup of that is really important. So, you know, there's two quotes. One's attributed to Bill Gates, like, technology is a magnifying glass. So if you add it to a poor process, it's just going to get worse. Mm. You add it to a good process, it can become great.
Mm.
And it's Gall's law, which is a process that starts simple can become complex. Mm. And that invariably better than a process that starts complex.
Mm.
Because that's going to need to be restarted at some
point. Mm. I love
that. When you think about hacking sales and you think about layering on technology in your process and even outsourcing things, everything you do is to automate or augment the things that are that you don't need to do that are not human.
Yeah. Sorry, that's my children in the background who I will stab. Well, I won't stab. We're videoing this, but they'll go back in the basement, Max.
Yeah, I got a little one running. I got a dog over here.
Yeah. They sound well behaved, at least. Your dog and your child, mine aren't, but I'll deal with them.
Yeah. So we're talking about this process. You need to actually set it up without any technology, without any, virtual assessment. You need to build the process and get it working as if everything is manual.
Yes.
And then look at it and say, okay, I've got this process. It's humming. What are the things in here that I can automate or augment that I don't need to be doing? Mm. How do I get my really expensive time out of here?
Yeah.
And there's another thing that I read about lately. It's like, think about yourself as a hourly professional.
Yeah.
You do $1 an hour work, $100 an hour work, $1,000 an hour work, and $10,000 an hour work. How do you make sure you are continually doing $10,000 an hour work?
Yeah.
So for example, if your process has you logging stuff in Salesforce, or your process has you like following up with a template of an email or something like that, that is less than $10 an hour work.
Yeah.
Literally what a machine should be doing, or you can outsource it to a virtual assistant for $4 an hour, $5 an hour.
Yeah.
Like, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
So how do you cut off your plate? What are areas that the process can be augmented? What are the areas that you could look at and say, like, okay, my A reps do this. My B, C, and D reps forget to do this.
Yes.
How do I remind them to do this? What are the things that I need to put in place to either remind them or automatically do it for them? So the only things that you want your reps doing, like the $10,000 an hour stuff that you want them doing, are the things where they're having conversations with people.
Yes.
And the machines can't do that.
Yes.
So like put your people in more conversations, more positions to have conversations. Arm them with better research and intelligence so they can have better conversations.
Yes.
They're like actually getting those conversations by allowing the automation and other things to happen that allow them to follow up on time, follow up repeatedly, follow up in the manner that the person that they're reaching likes to be followed up with. Yes. All those automated or augmented with technology. So again, simple process becomes complex, much better than starting with a complex process.
Yeah.
Technology is a magnifying glass. So you want to make sure that you have a great foundation there first before you start adding any technology.
I love and that. Then, yeah. That's so clever. So some advice, Max, I was given by a mentor years ago is you should only do what only you can do. And that goes back to, I follow, there's another guy, Tom Panos, who's an Australian real estate expert. And his famous line that always stuck to me is, does the pilot serve drinks on the plane? And it's so true, right? So it needs to be outsourced. So, what are you? So if I look at my business, I use HubSpot as a CRM. I have a VA. Not in the Philippines. I need to get that. So I'm going to make a note. Was it Upwork? I think you said.
Yeah, I think it's called Upwork now. It used to be Odesk and Elance. We used to use the company called TaskUs also, which was a service for this type of stuff. I think they only do like enterprise now.
Fine. So I know but I need to make that change because my VA is quite a lot of money compared to what you touched on. So I need to make that immediate change. But every lead I generate I use a company called Bant.io. You may know them. And all the leads they generate, I use Zapier to put it straight into my HubSpot. And then I use loom.com for all my video emails that go out. So I've got my little toolkit, but that's all I'm doing. So I think you made a really good point that my listeners watching this should start with make sure the processes are simple and working, and then they need to invest in the right technology. What are the five musts that you have to have in your toolkit to really be a sales hacker?
Yeah, obviously I'm biased, so I'd always put outreach in there. And I think there's stuff like Bant that's good, for one seat and small companies, but you really want to augment and automate as much as you can in the sales process that your A reps would do. And that's how I think about it. So it's like, we have at Outreach, we have a feature that's, it's called out of office. So if you have a sequence of emails going out to somebody or phone calls happening to a set of prospects that you've queued up, if they are out of office, it pauses that sequence and then restarts based on the date that's in their out of office reply that says when they're coming.
Very clever.
And it'll take the information out of the email for anybody else that it says to contact while the person's gone.
Yeah.
And sync Salesforce and ask if you want to start a sequence to those people. So if you get a response from, you know, Ben Jones and he's like, yeah, I'm out of office till August 7th. Please contact Dan Smith for anything urgent in the meantime. He's my director of sales. So now you can start the sequence to Dan Smith automatically and it pauses the sequence to Ben Jones.
Amazing. Yeah. I love that.
And that's the thing where it's like your A reps know to do that.
Yes.
For your A reps, more than 27 seconds.
Yeah.
All good. All good. Yeah, but whatever. But your B, C, and D reps, what do they do? Your C and D reps forget to pause the sequence. So the person comes back and they're like, are you kidding me? You sent me 40 emails while I was out of office. Clearly this is a robot. See you later.
Yeah. Your
reps might remember to pause it, but they forget to restart it.
Yeah.
Or they calendar it, and that's faulty. Well, for we turn your B, C, and D reps into your A reps, essentially, doing that. And so, like, what does that do if all of your reps performed as good as your A reps?
Yeah.
Well, everything up, right? So that's how we think about it. And that, those are like some of the nuances and differences with like the basic, you know, we're kind of at like this, you know, second or third inning now of sales engagement. And there's more to it than just basic sequences and dialer. So I start there. I think you definitely need to have a really good data setup. So I'm not sure one vendor or multiple vendors that piece together. I'm fine with that. It's one of the only areas that I'm like fine with it being multiple vendors because different vendors have different specialties. So like one vendor might have really good mid-market tech data and that's your like killer ICP. So you need that. Mm-hmm. But then enterprise across all different industries, you need great data in, you know, UK EMEA. You need one for APAC. There's many reasons why you might have to piecemeal your data vendors together. Yeah. So obviously that's a key piece. And then there's, you know, the newer areas of intent data and conversational intelligence. So conversational intelligence, making sure your reps are saying and doing the right things inside of their interactions with.
I've just been looking at refract.io where, you know, it's great AI for assessing conversations. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, there's Refract, there's Gong, Chorus, Jiminy, Exec Vision. There's a couple in that place. Outreach just came out with Outreach Kaya, a variation of that. So just understanding what's happening in the deals and then being able to act on that, send really good follow ups, take notes, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Then there's the intent data side of things. So I guess this is my fourth category, but making sure you're reaching out to the right people at the right time.
Yeah.
So Intent Data, Bombora, G2, Sixth Sense, a couple companies in that space that do a really good job notifying you on when companies are interested in your product or category.
And on that, Max, do you mean, because I've not come across Bombora, do you mean, are they triggers? So let's say a company's just been acquired or, you know, something's triggered on LinkedIn, you can then jump on the opportunity.
So let's say like a company like Procter & Gamble has employees that are starting to like read a lot of content around sales development.
Yes.
Sales. They are in the market for a sales engagement platform.
I see.
So we should reach out to them right now. Right. Or let's say that company are researching competitors. Maybe it's a good time for you to reach out.
Yeah.
So leveraging data. And then the fifth category I think is just channels. Yeah. So we've got live chat, which is a fantastic channel that is definitely making a come up right now. And then you got video. You said you use Loom. There's Vidyard. There's Hippo, I think, is another one.
Right.
But there's a lot of different ones that allow you to send videos. And it's really, we did this sales engagement study about a year ago. And every persona, every function acts differently in how they buy.
Yeah.
So if you're talking to CEOs, big companies, they live out of their phones.
Yeah.
So you need to get them here. How do you get them here? Well, phone, voicemail, very short clipped emails, maybe you'll get them here. But if you speak to if you're selling to an ops person, they're on two. Phone and voicemail, not going to work.
Yeah.
Video could work.
Yeah.
You know, book or, you know, a longer email could work. Direct mail there at the office, that could work. Mm. So it's very different based on who you're selling to. And now you have all these different channels, medium people on like LinkedIn, Twitter, social, are always doing. So it's not just about, you know, the timing. It's not just about the message. Mm. It's obviously about, you know, how are you reaching? Are you reaching somebody the way that they like to be reached?
Yeah.
You know, my wife, we have love languages. You know, how you like to give and receive love. It's the same thing. How you like to, you know, how you like to buy is more important than how the seller likes to sell.
Let me ask on that. You gave a couple of really good examples that an operational person will have two screens, or a CEO, you know, time poor, quick message. What's the best way to identify someone's preferred method of communication?
Best way to identify. I mean, there's trial and error.
Yeah.
You know, what the A-B testing is for. There's and I would do trial and error not based on an individual but based on a type of persona.
Yeah.
So companies. You know, for us at Outreach, we sell to three different personas inside of a company. We sell to the CRO, level, you know, sales revenue person. We sell to the sales ops or revenue ops professional, so the person in charge of, like, you know, the implementation and management of the, you know, admin of the project. And then we sell to the end user, which is the repper manager that's going to be using the product day in and day out.
Mm.
So we need to understand how to access all three of those.
Mm.
And so trial and error based on those personas, and possibly industry or segment of the market. So SMB, mid-market CEOs or CROs, very different than public company CROs. Very different. CRO at a Series B company needs to hit their next quarter so they can raise their next round.
Yeah.
CRO at a public company needs to know that they're going to hit six quarters from now. Wall Street needs to believe that.
Yeah.
So they have very different things going on in their heads.
That's really interesting.
So that's how we think about it. We test those personas, and, you know, we do surveys and you know, we talk to our analysts and things like that and see what other companies are doing. And then we calibrate off that, and then go and you know, pivot.
I love that. I've never looked at it at that perspective, but you're so right. There are different personas totally, and I've never given it so much thought. But that's really clever, actually. Really like that. You've worked with some amazing salespeople, I'm sure, in your time, Max, in the years with Sales Hacker and Outreach and the summits that you run. What's some of the best advice that you've been given from some of the best salespeople you've ever worked with? Or some of the best things you've seen? It might not be the best advice, but some of the best things you've observed that salespeople need to be doing daily.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, oh man, there's so much, and there's so much of that that gets baked into kind of like my thought process, my mentality, that I've taken with me. I mean, you learn from some amazing people on how to do things, and then you incorporate that into what you do, and that it morphs into, you know, now your process. So I mean, most of the stuff that we went over is things that I've either learned on the fly or learned from folks that, you know, I've asked with.
So let me reframe the question. You mentioned your sales, your A salespeople, your B, your C, your D. In your opinion, as well as using the technology available to them, what does it take to be an A salesperson now?
Yeah. being a salesperson, extremely organized, is one trait that I've seen work really well for A players. They got notepads. They know what they're doing going into a call. They know how they're executing after a call. They've got a plan. They stick to it. There's no like willy-nilly here. It's I get off the phone. I have the follow-up. I already know who I'm going to loop into the next one, who else needs to be in the deal. They know exactly how they're running every phone call.
Yes.
And they understand that that phone call is leading to the next meeting or the next step, and that, you know, they're not trying to close the deal, you know, at that minute.
Yes.
I think so, coachability. So they, not only are they coachable from like a human to human standpoint, but they learn. They're like fast learners from the process itself. So they pick up a new thing every time they get off a call. Yeah. And they're not afraid to like learn from their peers. We did this really awesome thing a couple months ago where we were like working on our messaging. We took a bunch of our A and B reps out to dinner and a couple of the sales managers, maybe like 10 of us. And we just said, let's talk. Like, let's talk about how you're going to market. Let's talk about some of the stuff you're doing in the sales process. And, you know, they just started talking. It's like, oh yeah, you know, I use this line when we talk about competitor, or we use, you know, I bring this up when I talk about this thing. It's like, okay, cool. Like, those are really good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, when you talk about this piece, how do you frame it? It's like, oh, you know, we know other players in our space can't do this. So this is a really good to bring up the fact that like, this is a reason why folks have upgraded to outreach from other.
Yeah.
One of my psychological things that I've learned along the way, and I don't know where I picked this up, but it's probably from reading or, you know, watching speakers, but you know, I pay attention to the words that we use when we talk about things, even if they're so just minuscule. Like, for example, when I don't say people switched from a competitor to outreach, I say they upgraded.
Yeah, nice.
It's not a switch. We're not on the same level. You know, it's not like you went from Red Sox to Blue Sox. You know, it's like upgraded.
Yeah, I love that.
So I think that's an important piece in that our best reps understand when to play those cards and how to have those conversations. And, you know, the interesting thing about watching some of our reps at outreach, which I love doing, I get on a lot of calls with our reps, is we don't talk bad about competition. Really great ways of positioning ourselves as a leader in the space without having to do that. And I find that is like one of the harder things to do, but like A reps know how to
give me an example, Max, of how an A rep would do that.
You know, there's conversations we'll be having with a certain partner where we'll say like, you know, I'm sure that, you know, XYZ competitor can do this, that, and the other thing, but you know, here's how we do it at outreach, and here's why, you know, we think that this is like, here's why we think this workflow is really done in this way.
Yes.
And so we like, oh, that doesn't work, or they suck, or anything like that. We just talk about, you know, our belief in our mission and the like, why it's less about a feature thing and more about a workflow.
And how another way I've seen it work is you talk about the feedback your clients give you. So if you're up against to say what the feedback my clients gave me is blah, blah, blah. So it's a nice way to show off without showing off, right?
Exactly. I mean, we definitely do frame it as like, hey, I mean, this is a reason why XYZ big company just upgraded to outreach. They couldn't do this if they wanted to. And while the features were there, the workflow wasn't. And
I love that. I love that upgrade. That's genius. Because I talk about transfer or switch, but you're right. It's so much more than that. I love that. That's a great, great nugget. Max, just to wrap up, my final question to you is, you know, you've been in sales for many years. If you had one sort of sales mantra, what would it be?
My career mantra in general is your 20s are for learning, your 30s are for earning. And I think you need to be patient. You need to come in and recognize that, you know, if you optimize your career at 20 for short-term revenue, you're going to cap your upside significantly for the long term. But if you focus on working for the right company where you can learn a lot, where you can build your network, I mean, those are like the two biggest things right there. Like your experience and your network, your two biggest transferable assets. Then you can set yourself up for the 30s where, I mean, you got some serious upside because like now you're the person to hire. You can get in at the, you know, early stages and get equity at a startup because, you know, you're the hot hand, or you can go be the rep that, you know, does $1 million a year and, you know, commission. Sky's the limit. But if you don't put time in your 20s, then you're sabotaging your 30s.
Totally. And you're
all the upside, you're sabotaging.
Brilliant advice. Max, thank you so much for sharing some amazing gold for all of us. Where's the best place for my listeners to reach out, read, you know, get your books, find out more about Outreach and Sales Hacker?
Yeah, saleshacker.com, outreach.io. Those are two sites for those. I wrote books that are all on Amazon. So my two sales books are Sales Engagement and Hacking Sales. Then I wrote a book on kind of how I hacked my career, which was very non-conventional. So that's called Career Hacking for Millennials. It's not just millennials. And then LinkedIn is where you can reach me directly. So LinkedIn, Max Auchiller. It's probably in the show notes if you can't spell my last name. So,
I'll make sure it is. I'll make sure it is. Max, thank you so, so much for your time.
It's so easy to spell. Like, how do I get one of those?
I mean, unless you're severely dyslexic, it just rolls off the tongue, right? So, absolutely. Max, thank you so much for giving up your time. Really sincerely appreciate it, my friend. And stay safe out there.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks, Max. Keep well.